Welcome back, listeners. On this episode, I spoke to director Garth Davis about his work on Foe. Davis is a DGA-winning, Emmy-nominated, and BAFTA-nominated director. He is most known for his work on Lion, which received 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, Best Supporting Actress, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Original Score, and Best Cinematography. Foe stars Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal.
Hey Jackson, how are you, mate?
I am doing wonderful. How about you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, yeah.
Good. Well, first off, congratulations on the New York Film Festival premiere. How does that feel? I mean, the New York crowd is just so different than I feel other film festivals have been, and this year is no exception, I have to say.
I didn't know what to expect, really. I have heard rumors of how tough New York audiences can be, but I was met with the complete opposite. It was a super passionate, super engaged audience. There was a lot of activity during the screening through some of the scenes. A very engaged Q&A, a lot of conversations afterwards. So it just had a great energy. So it was a beautiful premiere. Really, really beautiful.
Mm. And one thing I really love about your films is that they ask a lot of questions. And one question that got asked in Foe that I wanted to sort of pose to you is, do you think more about the past or more about the future? Because that question while it gets answered in a way, I'm just curious, it never gets answered directly by Junior. So I'm curious what your answer to that would be.
For me personally?
For you personally, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think more in the present.
Mm.
I think that's what I'm trying to do. But I guess just being human, you spend most of your time in either the past or the future. I would probably say more in the future than the past, with a huge desire to be in the present.
Love that. And what is it about the characters of Junior and Henrietta that really stand out to you?
I definitely align myself with Hen probably the most, because she's very much she's an empath, and she really understands that we're part of something bigger, even if it hasn't been proved by science, a connection to nature and to sentience and all those. Like, I love her connection to nature, and her sense of wonder and curiosity and wanting to, being aware very lucidly of how precious time is and wanting to live her life before she dies. So I really love that about her. But I love all the characters, I guess. Like, even Junior, I also empathize with him wanting to protect and honor the legacy of his family, having the generations of the farm and all of those, the kind of traditional qualities of him I really find fascinating as well. But what really excites me about this couple is that they truly are good for each other. Like, they are soulmates in many ways. It's just that over time, Junior's just become closed. And emotionally closed, and it's just one of those tragic love stories where one of them decides to not change and is unwilling to change and be spontaneous, and the effect that has on the other person means that they're less themselves, they're unable to be themselves. So that question of identity is very fascinating. And then I guess with Terrence, I don't know if this is answering your question completely, but I guess with Terrence, I was very intrigued, why would someone want to invent, and I'm even asking this question now, why are we trying to invent sentient AI? Like, why are we doing that? And that's a really, I don't think anyone's really thinking why we're doing it. It's just happening, you know? And so I was really curious, like, I've got a character here that's trying to bring this into the world and really truly believes this is going to better humanity. And what drives that mind? What drives that purpose and that desire? And I think that was a really exciting journey with Aaron Pierre in developing all of Terrence's choices for the performances as well.
And you're a bit ahead of the curve. I mean, obviously, I mean, it's coming out with, I mean, so much of the conversation around AI, but this has been percolating in your brain, obviously, for a much longer time. So, I mean, when did this sort of gestation and this sort of concern come to your forefront?
Actually, I read a book maybe almost 10 years ago called In the Age of Spiritual Machines by Ray Kurzweil. And he predicted nanotechnology and then even went on to artificial intelligence. And so I've always had in the back of my mind that as kind of weird of all and unbelievable that all sounded at the time when I read it, that I thought it was coming. And all of these things are coming true. And it just seems to me that, you know, we're starting to get into uncharted territory, and where do the ethics lie in that space? This idea of being replaced is brought up in the movie. This idea that metaphorically as well, you know, how our identity is replaced in long-term relationships because we can't be ourselves sometimes. The question around science replacing what it is to be human, and that's kind of a frightening thing. So look, I don't have any we have no answers or solutions, and in fact the AI in this movie is beautifully spiritually open, but I guess it does raise a question around ethics, and shouldn't we be thinking before we take these steps?
And I love that this is set in the sort of heartlands, because as a once sort of farmer kid removed, my grandparents owned a farm and then my uncle and aunt took over. I'm just curious, what about that that sort of area just sort of solidified this placement, and why this placement in particular? Obviously it's in the book, but I'm just curious what fascinates you about that.
Well, I guess just from a purely practical point of view, the story ends up being told here because Terrence is trying to find an appropriate place to test his experiment, and clearly isolation is a good one. He can let the artificial intelligence roam free in a more isolated place. So that's one question. But also, I guess, you know, especially in the time that the film's set, where a lot of these farms are not farmable anymore. So the pressure on the people still trying to hold on to this idea, you know, these couples and these families and these people are going to be under a lot of pressure. So that was also very enticing for Terrence too, to replace one of those and putting his artificial intelligence into a high stakes emotional relationship that he could find. So, I mean, that kind of serves a story, but I guess the other thing it does is just, in a way, makes the film feel more claustrophobic. It almost puts more pressure and scrutiny, puts the magnifying glass on this couple alone. So we're not dealing with friends and family and people and city streets. It's like, it literally is almost, it's like this primal exploration of a relationship and kind of stripping things right back, you know, almost like being trapped on an island together and what happens when that happens. And if you look at COVID, you know, a lot of people ended up having to be kept in rooms and a lot of relationships broke up with COVID, you know. So I guess all of those things, you know, really raise the stakes and the believability of the story.
Yeah, even as boundless as the landscape, which I mean is absolutely gorgeously shot. I mean, it's just, it does come back to just two individuals And that's fascinating. And final question for you. I mean, like you said, you can't answer how do we solve for AI? How do we sort of move on to this into this next chapter of life and technology? But I'm just curious, what is a takeaway that when viewers, what do you hope that a takeaway is that viewers can take away?
I guess a couple of things. I mean, for sure, what the film is asking us to do is to wake up. It's asking us to, let's not just sleepwalk into the future. Let's be alive in our own lives. Let's be alert to the people in our lives, and let's just try to connect in a better way, you know. And if we do that, and not to take things for granted, that's really one of the main driving principles we used in the making of the movie, is if you take something for granted, you can lose it. And that can apply to anything. The other thing is also the title of the movie, Foe, is, I guess, the philosophical question given to the audience as they watch the movie, like, what is the foe? And I guess, you know, that's, everyone can have their answers, but in a way, the real junior is the he in a way his character represents stasis and the idea of the inability to change or not wanting to change, and that kind of stasis is in a way foe. So he's like he's the foe in many ways. He represents what foe means. But yeah, look, I just hope it reminds people that time is short, and let's live lives that are rich and in alignment with why you're here, if that makes sense.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. This podcast was hosted and produced by yours truly, Jackson Vickery. But a very special thank you to Sterling Gavinsky for the theme music and to Carly Haney for the artwork. We will see you next time.